and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How was your weekend? I hope everything's okay. Right now, I am obsessing on this cord. Like, one cord is tangled around another cord over here, Chris, and Kayla, my board op. And it's no big deal. See that? There's nothing you can do about it right now. But you know what? I'm sitting there looking at it because I have OCD. Is that a problem? Mark Riley, not here today. Don't know what he's doing. But he's going to be back tomorrow. Did you notice that was a little cryptic, Kalo? Like, what are you doing, Riley? I'm taking a personal day. I don't know what he's doing, but I hope he's having a good time, and I hope everything's okay. I'm sure everything is.
Get that tie on there, Riley, for that Java interview.
Whoa, no, no.
Polishing up the old resume.
No, don't even start the rumors. Come on, the four people on the blog might get all worked up. Hey, anyway, that in and of itself is going to cause a problem. Good news for people who drive in automobiles. Gas prices are down. Maybe they'll be down enough for next weekend for you not to have a horrendous weekend, knowing that it's going to cost you $900 to drive, you know, to the Grand Canyon from Flagstaff, Arizona, from wherever the hell you are. Apparently, the price of self-serve regular fell 6.4% per gallon. In the average, which is good for a lot of people, because next weekend is the big vacation weekend. They're going to go back up, so I don't know if you want to start stockpiling or drilling for your own oil or running your car on French fry grease. But good news is that they are down a bit. Another interesting factoid for today is that about 4 in 5 Americans want the Senate to thoroughly examine the president's nominees to be federal judges. And this is an attitude shared by Democrats, Republicans, Independents. That means that most Americans want the Senate to do what they're supposed to do, debate, to have a process. So that means that most Americans do not want the filibuster to be gotten rid of to serve the agenda of the majority at this particular moment. So that's encouraging, Chris. A lot of people may not know who their senator is. A lot of people may not know exactly what the Senate does. A lot of people may not know exactly why this is going on, but they do know that they don't want to change something that it's been in place for 200 years. The filibuster is there to protect the minority during a time of majority tyranny so they don't get bullied, you know, out into the wilderness. So hopefully we'll see. Tomorrow how that vote unfolds specifically, but it's encouraging to me that a lot of Americans want the Senate to act appropriately, to follow senatorial procedure, even if it means filibustering, even if the debate goes on forever to the point where they can't even vote on these people. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's what I believe.
Can we get the New York senator on the phone?
Because yeah, which one?
I don't care. Anyone? Because
Schumer, Hillary Clinton?
Yes.
Anybody?
Yes, Hillary Clinton, because I want to ask her if she can help me out with a summons I got over the weekend.
Oh, yeah, so you had a bad weekend, man. Oh. Poor Chris is on the subway here in New York City.
And you know what? I'm here at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I get off of work around noon. You know, not a big schedule, you know, but, it's hard. It's hard hours.
Yeah.
So, I'm exhausted after work.
Yeah.
So I get on the train at 34th Street.
Yeah.
The train goes to 14th Street,
right,
and an elderly man gets on, and I gladly, spring up and offer him my seat. He thanks me and everything. He gets over Canal Street.
And then you sat on top of him. You just sat on the old man,
no,
didn't you?
No. I stood up.
Okay.
One stop.
Yeah.
And then at Canal Street, he gets off. I sit back down.
Mm-hmm.
I put my foot up a little bit, and there are like 12 other seats open.
Yeah.
And we get to off at the next stop, or, I don't get off, but, the train stops at the next stop, and a cop asks me to get off the train.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells me that I was obstructing a seat, and I will be getting a summons for what just happened.
See that? Now, that's an important issue. Chris, Kalos. Kalo's summons is an important issue. We need to get Hillary Clinton on the phone to address this summons directly.
Yes.
God knows we can't get a Democrat on the phone for any reason. We had Ted Kennedy a couple of weeks ago. We talked to Barbara Boxer. But for some reason, they just don't want to come on the air here. But I'm sure because of this particular problem, because it is such an important problem, Chris, and it is specifically a New York problem, that perhaps they could campaign on it.
I demand it.
Maybe Charles Schumer, Hillary Clinton could say, we got Kalo's summons removed. But I don't know how the hell that happened. I'm on the train all the time. I don't, you know, I've never seen a cop. What was there, an undercover officer? You just got unlucky. Someone made their quota on you.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what happened. And the cop even said, he's like, look, you know what? I'm just going to give you a warning this time. But if it happens again, you will be charged with a criminal act, and you will have to pay. Yeah, what he quote unquote, he said, you know what? I don't even carry that much money, so I don't even know how much it is. Like, what does that even mean? Like, what, I'm going to have to pay $1,000 because I'm exhausted and I want to put my foot up on the subway?
Someone's going to jail for relaxing. Yeah. That's what it sounds to me, Kalo. It sounds like someone else is going to have to come in here and do the job.
Boy, I'll be passed around prison so fast.
Well, look, hopefully, you know, that'll work out. What did I went to the Russian baths this weekend. There's a nasty cold going around, folks, and I know it's going all over the country. I had this cold for like a week. I lost my voice, and then it went into my chest. It's still in my chest. I don't know when it's time to go to the doctor, but I went to the Russian baths, and for those of you who don't know what a Russian bath is, they're unique to this area, and there's not many around. I don't know if they're all over the country, but basically you go to this place, and you sit in an oven with a bunch of other people and just sweat. And then if you pay $30, some guy will come around and beat the hell out of you with some leaves. Yeah, it's called a plaza. You lay down and they take these oak leaves and they just start pounding you with these oak leaves. You know what? But it's not.
Did you get that?
Yeah, of course I got
it. So you had a guy pound you for about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I did. He pounded me with oak leaves and so did my wife. It was co-ed day. All right.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and I hope you recorded that so we can get that in the board so we can have some fun with that later. Because I'd like some
free golf.
But anyways. Moving on, it is Monday, and
wife still in town, by the way?
She is still in town.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get late.
Oh, what is that? Yeah, well, she had the plaza, too. But let me give some people some information they need before I get into what happened in the Russian bath when my wife got the plaza treatment. Because they have to, you know, you're sort of half naked there, and there's all kinds of men and women around. So that was an awkward moment.
What part of her is naked?
Just the top. But, you know, it was okay.
Wow.
You know, we all got over it, you know, but it was a little, I'll explain it in a minute. Can I do some news here for a minute? Not really news.
I don't know. Your topless wife and news, I don't know.
Well, I mean, why not wait on the topless wife?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Why get over the break?
Why not wait on the topless wife? It was said she was topless. It was just for a minute. Now I feel uncomfortable.
Just so slow.
But no, you know what, dude? I'm not going to give it to you now. Now you get none of that. So listen to this. Newsweek buckles. Newsweek says, right, they buckled and they whimpered in the face of White House coercion. They said that they will no longer use anonymous sources as sole attribution for an article. That means that, you know, this is a respected source of journalism. This is something that has been used, you know, certainly like the famous one is Deep Throat during the Watergate, mm-hmm. that you have an anonymous source that is a reliable source, and you can break a story on that. But now, because of this Newsweek incident, because they've been blamed by the White House for torture in Afghanistan, for protesters in Afghanistan, for murders in Afghanistan that happened because of these protests, they have buckled. And the only – see, this is the weird thing about this. The only entity that says the stories are unsubstantiated, stories of Quran abuse, is the only entity that says they're unsubstantiated is the Pentagon. All right, the Red Cross says it's true. The American military Muslim chaplain that was there present in Guantanamo says it's true. An American military translator says it's true. Multiple detainee eyewitness accounts say it's true. But the Pentagon hasn't substantiated, so then it can't be true. It's ridiculous. I mean, common sense and a little bit of investigative speculation, I'm not a journalist, would lead one to believe that these are true accounts of what happened. But Newsweek has to bail. This on top of PBS being taken over by Republicans. It's going to get to a point where do we go for any real news? Where do we go for any real information, any real journalism? If you think it felt weird before Air America got on the air, I mean, literally, Chris, you remember, we used to get calls from people in South Carolina and North Carolina who were literally like, I can't talk too loud. I'm listening on the computer. Someone might catch me, but thank God I'm not alone because I thought I was going crazy.
Yep.
Well, it's going to get worse. People are going to go crazy again because there's not going to be any news outlets, and you're going to have to sort through a lot of random information from a lot of different sources and be your own judge, which is fine, but it would be nice if there was some sort of press, some sort of media that actually could be responsible and not, you know, buckle under White House coercion. See, now, the thing that I'm thinking is that if they're willing to use vicious dogs during interrogation, knowing that Muslims and actually most people have an aversion to ferocious dogs, if they're willing to cut the beards of the detainees that signify religious commitment, if they're willing to use women interrogators to smear fake menstrual blood on the detainees and make the so they'll be impure in the eyes of God. You would think that in relation to that type of offending creativity, that the Quran desecration would have been one of the first things they tried before they said, hey, go in with the fake menstrual blood and make this guy ashamed of himself. You know? So it's like, it's not Newsweek, that the real crime. It's the neocons' refusal to take responsibility for anything. These guys just place blame onto underlings, and they just don't take responsibility for anything. They call liberals whiners. They call us whiners, which is a childish term. What's more childish than blaming someone else when you've been caught red-handed? What's more childish than not taking responsibility for something? What's more childish than going, we didn't do it. It was that guy over there that can't help himself, or that underling, or that other person. It just it drives me nuts that these people will not. And they, like, where's Tom DeLay? They just move people around. This is another great example of not blame dispersal, but if they think that it's getting too hot, they'll just, you know, put someone out to pasture for a while and bring them back. Why hasn't George Bush taken responsibility for any of this? And this guy, in his reaction to the photos of Saddam Hussein on the cover of the Sun and the cover of the Post, you know, it's very telling. We'll get into that in a second. It's 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
To share what we've learned about parenting, call us toll-free. 1-800-448-3000.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Past the hour, Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Mark Riley. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll tell you, man. It was. I had a good weekend, and I'm not ashamed of that, Chris. I'm not ashamed of it, Kayla. Yeah. Well, what do you mind? I'm sorry that you had such problems. What we were talking about is Newsweek has released an editorial to its readers, and I'll quote this editorial: "The cryptic phrase." Sources said, and that's in quotations, will never again be the sole attribution for a story in Newsweek. Now, they have buckled under pressure. As I said before, is that the stories about the Quran being abused, first of all, it has been substantiated by the Red Cross. It has been substantiated by an American military Muslim chaplain. It has been substantiated by an American military translator. It's been substantiated by multiple detainees. Eyewitness accounts. All right, the Pentagon has not substantiated it yet, so that means it's not true for the world. This is ridiculous. We're going to trust those guys. We're going to trust Donald Rumsfeld. We're going to trust Stephen Cambone within the Pentagon. These are the guys that are guilty of doing it, and they created the climate, in which this could be done. And I'll tell you what, it was substantiated. It has been substantiated. I'll put a name on it: Martin Mubanga. On Laura Flanders' show the other night, here on Air America Radio, substantiated that. There's a name, a former Guantanamo Bay detainee. Mubanga was released in January. All charges against him were dropped, and he returned to his home in the United Kingdom. Over 3 years in detention, he says he experienced and witnessed multiple acts of abuse of the Quran, starting in the early months of 2002. And he was interviewed last night on Laura Flanders, and we're going to play that right now.
There was two on either side of me, holding my wrist as I was kneeling down, and they had them in wrist locks. And one of the three that was searching took my Quran, and then instead of replacing it to its place, he threw that on the floor. They then basically gripped me tighter so that I could not do anything, and they wanted to see if they could provoke a strong reaction from me.
That was Martin Mubanga, former Guantanamo Bay detainee, on Laura Flanders last night. So we just substantiated it here. On Laura Flanders' show, she substantiated it. There's a name, and there's somebody that, the Pentagon will still unsubstantiate it. They will say it's not in our report, so it does not count. And then Karzai, from Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, the president there, he decides that he's going to come out and say that he wants justice from the United States over the alleged abuse of two Afghan detainees who reportedly died in American custody. The catch is here's a quote from Karzai. He says, "This is simply not acceptable." I quote, "We are angry about this. We want justice. We want the people responsible for this sort of brutal behavior punished and tried and made public." Okay? At the same time, I continue quoting Karzai, "I must say that while we condemn this, we show Afghans We show Afghans, we show the rest of the world that the behavior of two soldiers or interrogators must not reflect on the United States or on the U.S. people. Why not? Where's your full courage? What are you just trying to protect your own butt? I mean, where's the full courage of this guy who's the president of Afghanistan? Why not have it reflect on the United States? Why is he doing exactly what the United States administration is doing, blaming the soldiers, blaming the underlings? Who created this atmosphere of torture? Who was the person that and the people responsible for allowing this to happen? Was it Lindy England? Was it just these underlings? I don't think so. And now Karzai, who is a former U.S. oil, he's an oil company executive, now a heroin company executive, is having some problems in his country in terms of managing the heroin situation. I think that Karzai is in big trouble over there. I think he's got very little control over his country. I think that this is just an attempt at politics in his own country by looking that he's going to ask for justice. And it's been reported now that heroin production in Afghanistan is up more than ever. In 2003, $2.3 billion, that's 50% of gross domestic product. 2004, $2.8 billion, 60% of gross domestic product in Afghanistan, heroin. Afghanistan produced 87% of the world's opium in 2004. 10% of all Afghans were involved in heroin cultivation during that year. Acres of poppy production in Afghanistan, 2001, 4,200 acres. 2002, 77,000 acres. 2003, 152,000 acres. 2004, 510,000 acres. That's a lot of dope, folks. And opium comes from the poppy plant and is used to make heroin and morphine, obviously. Now, apparently, in Afghanistan, they had something in place. They had a program in place to defoliate the heroin, but they've only done, 250 acres. They wanted to do like 37,000 acres. But the problem is that this is the gross national product of this country, and that there are warlords and there are territories that cultivate this stuff, and they're willing to fight for it. There are actual armed people, fighting for the heroin production. To me, this is amazing. This is political in the sense that, Karzai's got to appeal to these people. It's almost like the Bush administration appealing to big pharma, to pharmaceutical companies. Part of the political base are heroin manufacturers, and they're trying to figure out a way around it. They're getting the British involved. They're trying to figure out, what can we tell these farmers? Do we subsidize them? Do we pay them for not, developing a crop and, maybe push it back to Thailand? I mean, what are you going to do with all that dope? See, these are the issues, and that's part of the violence, too, is the heroin problem there, and now we've got Karzai trying to kiss the butt of some of the warlords who are in Afghanistan in order to politicize himself. It's very difficult to assess. Too big for me. Let's talk about Saddam Hussein's picture and my wife when we come back. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Big media consolidation. We are polishing old Sparky. Do you see what I'm saying?
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Mark Maron here. It's Morning Tradition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. Took the day off today. But I'm here. I'm doing the thing. We're talking about, I got the liberal agenda coming up in a few minutes. We've got Andy Richter a little later on the show, Conan's old sidekick, old friend of mine. That should be good. Kitty Kelly is going to talk about the Bushes. That should be interesting and provocative. I got some questions I want to ask because I want to believe all that stuff. It's weird that when you don't like somebody, you want to believe almost anything that is said that it's bad about them. I don't think that's unusual. It makes you feel better. But then when you find out it's not true, it's sort of like, oh, really? I was really hoping he was that bad. Now, these pictures of Saddam Hussein have caused some trouble. I saw them, and I got to be honest with you, as evil as that bastard was and whatever it is that he did, however many people he killed, to be on the front page of a paper in your underpants is a sad day for anybody. And I don't know. I think it humanizes the guy more than makes him look bad. That's the saddest thing about it, is that you just, I was sort of like, my first response was like, he's not in bad shape for a 65-year-old guy. And isn't that pathetic that look how human he is? He's just a droopy little guy in his underpants. And I felt embarrassed for him, even though he is the tyrant, the great dictator of Baghdad and the killer of many millions of people, thousands of people anyways. That I was embarrassed for him.
It's kind of like that dream you have when you wake up and
you're on the cover of the Post naked, all over the country.
Exactly.
Yeah,
this doesn't happen.
I have that dream. Yeah, there I am on the cover of the New York Post naked. Of course you have those dreams, especially now with technology the way it is. They don't know who took the picture. Anyone can take a picture with a cell phone. You know, thank God I don't drink anymore. That's all I'm saying. Because I could end up in jail in my underpants on the cover of the Post if I did drink, or in somebody's apartment doing something. There's a lot of options.
Your underpants.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about the Schwitz in a second, but dig this. Officials emphasize that because it was not a sanctioned government release, the photograph, the United States is not in violation of the Geneva Conventions, although an individual might be. The military is claiming that it wasn't a military person who took this. How could it not be? But it's interesting how... under Articles 13 and 14 of the 1949 Geneva Conventions 3, relative to the treatment of prisoners of war, POWs, quote, must at all times be protected against insults and public curiosity, end quote. And also, quote, are entitled in all circumstances to respect for their persons and their honor, end quote. See, not that this administration cares about the Geneva Conventions in any way. That's why we have... Alberto Gonzalez in charge of the Justice Department. Not that we care about the Geneva Conventions in any strong sense, obviously, but what's interesting about this is that they're willing to blame an individual. There's always this fault on the individual. This is a Republican policy. This is also how they promote people to take care of themselves. Is that you blame the individual and you promote the individual. It's never the system's fault. In the Republican mode of operations. Now, President Bush, in response to the photo, said, quote, I don't think this... Well, let me backtrack. A lot of people, there were some... The papers, The Sun, said that it's important that the people of Iraq see him like that to destroy the myth of Saddam. However, a lot of Arab commentators suggest that the photos could increase anti-American feeling in the region. And President Bush said, quote, I don't think a photo inspires murderers. I think they're inspired by an ideology that's so barbaric and backwards that it's hard for many in the Western world to comprehend how they think, end quote. Well, how about hundreds of photos of Americans torturing detainees at Abu Ghraib? How about all these stories that come out of Guantanamo? Those don't have anything to do with it either. How can you dismiss a photograph of Saddam Hussein, yet there is a torrent of proof that this type of transgression on behalf of the Americans completely foments, Arab and Muslim anger. It's just baffling to me that these people say these things. An article can do it, but not a picture of Saddam Hussein, because I guess the idea is that no one cares about Saddam Hussein. But if I had the mild moment, if I had that weird, human reaction of, well, that's embarrassing, it'll deflate the myth, but he's still just a guy who's being put on the front page of every paper, half naked. Not that I'm sympathizing, but if it were me, I'd be embarrassed. Chris, how about you? Would you be embarrassed?
Of course I would be embarrassed, but I mean, I've been in my underwear out in public before, but I mean, it's hard because this guy was a ruthless dictator, and it's hard to feel bad for him.
Yeah, I don't feel that bad for him.
No, of course, but I mean, it isn't right. If it's against the Geneva Convention, then it's wrong. It's just wrong.
Yeah, absolutely right. So gas prices continuing to go down. That's good news for people traveling this weekend. No. Now, okay, we'll tell you what happened at the Russian Baths if you want to know what happened. I went. You don't have these in a lot of the places where you live, but we have Russian bathhouses here in New York where you go. They have a eucalyptus sauna. They have a Turkish steam room. They have this oven that is just basically a brick oven that you sit in and dump cold water on yourself. They have cold plunge pools. I went there to clear my chest out.
Is that all fun? Right? Do you like it?
Who cares if it's fun? The thing is, I'm going for my health. I'm going there to get rid of this thing in my chest. God forbid I go to a doctor and get antibiotics, but I'm against antibiotics because I think the more you take antibiotics, the more it screws up your immune system. So I go to the Schwitz. That's what they call it in Yiddish, the Schwitz. And I go with my wife. It's co-ed day. They give you shorts. They give you a robe. You sit there. You sweat. We had platzas. A platza is a treatment where you get a Russian guy who comes in with a bucket and these giant oak brushes, these oak leaf brushes that act as an astringent. They dip them in hot water, and you're laying in a 150-degree oven at least, and they start beating you with these brushes, and they start, moving them around. They lather them up, and it's supposed to pull all the toxins out of your system.
Ow.
So you get one, and you're in this communal steam room, hot room.
So what do you mean? There's like a bunch of people there?
bunch of people hanging out.
Like,
yeah.
What's the average age of?
Well, there's all
people?
Kinds. There's old people. There are couples. There's only about six or seven people, a couple of guys, a few women. And, you know, my wife got her plaza first, and they had to take her top off to do the plaza. And at first I'm like, oh, would somebody please, my wife, can we cover that up, please? But you know what was interesting? Women were more uncomfortable than the men.
Really?
Yeah, that the women were sort of like, oh, my God. You know, I could see it in their faces. And guys, of course, were like, oh, wow, free show. You know. And then, like, I got kind of upset at first. And I thought, well, what am I supposed to do? And then the only thing I could figure out to do was just to be proud that that she was my wife. Is that wrong?
No, that's fine. I mean, you know.
It didn't last long. You know, I mean, it wasn't like she was naked or anything, but, you know, there was...
Well, did she start dancing or anything for them?
No, there was no dancing. But then I started to think, like, isn't this the way humans should be? They have nude beaches in Europe. People walk around naked all the time. Why do we got to be so freaky about it here? What's the big deal? You know, what's the big deal? Why do people got to be so uncomfortable about that? Then I'm watching 60 Minutes last night, and I saw this whole abstinence-only preacher. Did you see that? That was nuts.
No.
You know what's happening is that they're telling these kids to be abstinent, and they're telling these kids to make these commitments not to have sex, right? So these kids think that, okay, well, I'm going to protect my virginity, all right? I'm not going to have, you know, vaginal sex. So what ends up happening is, and they also tell them not to use condoms as well, because they say that doesn't help anything. They're just trying to discourage kids from having sex. So these kids who don't want to, you know, lose their virginity end up having oral sex and anal sex because they think that's okay. You don't really lose your virginity. And by some miracle, you don't need condoms and there's no sexually transmitted diseases. So sexually transmitted diseases go up a little bit because these kids aren't given the right information in the name of abstinence. It's ridiculous. And this is something that Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania supports. They had a big piece on Rick Santorum in the New York Times Magazine this weekend. Rick Santorum, who I think... I hate him more. Him and Tom DeLay, I can just picture them in my head and have immediate contempt for. I can't stand the guy. I can't stand him because he is a religious fanatic ass. I just can't deal with him. And they put this huge piece in the New York Times Magazine, and it wasn't an assault on the guy. It was one of those sort of like, let the music do the talking. Let the evidence speak for itself. You judge the guy. I'm like, come on, take a couple of shots at him. He's a religious fanatic. He's belligerent. He's arrogant. You know, and he says horrendous things, and he stands for horrendous things. And he's one of these guys that's very pro-abstinence only. This is the same guy in relation to the Senate, in relation to Harry Reid. It doesn't matter who he said this about, but this is how he thinks. This is a quote from Rick Santorum on desires. Quote, now we are forced to do something that societies often do when people can't control their desires. We have to pass laws to stop their desires, end quote. Yeah, good idea. That'll really happen. That'll just cause good things in society. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about him in just a second. I want to, you know, I want to talk about Laura Bush goes to the Bushes together, you know, managed to offend Muslims, Jews, and Christians all in one weekend.
What they do this time?
Well, just Laura Bush's presence in Israel was enough to make people just go crazy. And she's wearing this religious garb, trying to look like a Muslim woman or pass off as something, a black shawl walking around the Dome of the Rock, putting a note in the wall. Is that even true? Can she even do that? Is that supposed to be something that non-Jews can do, put a note in the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, a note to God? Is she allowed to do that as a fanatical, you know, Christian? Is she allowed to do that? I guess anyone can do it.
You're not to ask the
I'll
Jewish
find
community.
Out. Yeah, somebody will call, 866-303-2270. Someone will call about you know, whether or not Laura Bush is allowed to put a note to God in the wall. I half expected the wall to come tumbling down. I thought that maybe her presence as some sort of she's yeah, yeah.
Why? Because she beds the Antichrist?
Exactly. She went to the Dome of the Rock, and she was like, it was beautiful, and it is beautiful. I've been to the Dome of the Rock, but I half expected everything to come tumbling down when she was there. But instead, just, you know, a bunch of Arabs started yelling at her, Jews were yelling at her, and she obviously made no statement at all about anything. She just pretended like it wasn't happening. And then Bush was did a commencement address at Calvin, what's it called, in Michigan Christian, it's Calvin, well, what is it? Graduates of a Michigan Christian-based, Calvin College, that's the name of the place. And he basically encouraged these kids. He said, what you really ought to do, in so many words, is get yourself a job in a faith-based organization. Do some charity work. And then I'm reading the Rick Santorum piece, and I realize that these faith-based initiatives, these faith-based organizations, is another way for Republicans to promote business growth, is that they're encouraging people, either, you know, small religious organizations. You can start up your own religious organizations, and it's basically a way to start a business by using people who are in need to start your business. It may work for people. You can start a school. You can start a charity. You can start a, you know, a rental hall. There's a guy who that Santorum deals with in this article that's in the New York Times Magazine, where, you know, basically he says that this is great stuff. It's a competitive marketplace, and if you use your government allotted money right, you can really build yourself quite a little empire on faith-based initiative money. So this is a new way that the Republicans are encouraging entrepreneurship.
Wow.
Yeah, so we'll be back. We'll talk about the liberal agenda coming up. I got Andy Richter coming up. I will talk about – what will I talk about next? Yeah, I'm going to talk about, you know, what people are thinking about the Senate filibuster issue as well. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning's edition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning's edition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
After exposing the shadow government, Mark Maron, private investigator, returns next week to investigate and expose the most dangerous, dark, and powerful organization in American history. Its tentacles reach everywhere. Its evil message infects everyone, even reaching the highest seats of government. Can one slightly used private eye be a match for the religious right?
Mark, kneel with us now and pray. I said kneel and pray. Now!
No! No! No!
Who is the real power behind the evil that is the religious right?
My brothers and sisters, follow me. Follow him. Follow us. For you are the sheep he has chosen. You are his army of sheep.
You! How? It can't be. How? No!
He has the mark of the beast!
I think that's just a mole.
Destroy him!
On May 26th, Mark Maron starts a case that will take him to hell and back again.
I'll see you in hell. Hold on a minute, that didn't come out right. I'll see you in heaven? Nah, that doesn't really work.
Don't miss an episode of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom.
52 past the hour. Mark Maron here. Mark Riley is away until tomorrow. You're listening to Morning Sedition.
I can't wait for that Temple of Doom, my friend.
It's Air America Radio. I can't wait to see where I go either, man. We'll get to the bottom
exciting of
it. Religious rights, you know, Christo-fascist zombie brigade stuff. I'm excited about it. So, it's the liberal agenda, really? Here we go. The liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. Here are your marching orders for today. One, get yourself cloned in South Korea. Register your cloned self as a Democrat. Two, replace all Guantanamo copies of Koran with waterproof versions. That's nice. It'll help out. Three, go to the nearest Army recruiter's office and in your jauntiest voice ask, so, how's business? Four, applaud President Hamid Karzai's work to help preserve Afghanistan's rare indigenous poppy plants. Five, accuse Laura Bush of not being inclusive for having no Christians or agnostic amongst the Arabs and Jews heckling her. Today's phrase just dropped into conversation. Hey, you graduated. Fantastic. Here, strap this boulder of debt on your back. Wake up, sheeple. Bush is the pharaoh and you're building his pyramid. There you go. So apparently Laura Bush didn't have the amazing comedy writers that I have when she was in the Middle East being heckled by a number of Jews, Muslims of all sorts. You see, they said
mom's like Muslim and Jewish hecklers.
Yeah.
That's a tough crowd.
Yeah, I'll say. But, I mean, apparently, you know, a couple of weeks ago they were saying she should be a stand-up. She should be a comedian. Remember after her cute comments about Desperate Housewives and this, that, and the other thing. They're like, Laura Bush should be a comedian. Well, where were the quick comebacks, man? Where were the quick comebacks in the Middle East? Where was the, it's amazing that of the thousands of people who were killed here, you were the one who survived. Pow, how about I get the timing right? I would come down to where you work and knock the Molotov cocktail out of your hand. How about that? Nothing? Huh? Here we go. I only have 5 minutes to make a fool out of myself. You have the rest of your life in prison after the Secret Service arrests you. The rest of your life in prison.
She could have used all these.
Yeah, sure. I remember when I blew up my first car. Hey. Nothing. Shouldn't use any of them. Didn't use one of them.
That's just lazy.
Oh, man. I got to do some stand-up. I got to do some stand-up this weekend.
You didn't do anything this weekend?
I took the weekend off. I'm going soft in the brain.
Did you hear me? The Star Wars
I didn't go see nothing.
You didn't see the Star Wars
I didn't
movie.
See the Star Wars
they
movie.
They made $150 million.
Not $8 of my money.
Wow.
Not $9 of my money.
Good for you.
I missed the one in the middle. I don't know exactly. I don't know where we are. I don't know what's happening. Yeah, you got to see all of them. I don't know.
Don't worry. You can just go see it.
There's a problem in space, right?
Yeah.
There's an issue. There's a good and evil things, and apparently
holy war.
Yeah, and the CIA in space, and Bush has a part, doesn't he? Isn't there something? Isn't there comments that have?
Apparently, Darth Vader said you're either with us or against us.
Yeah, I'm just busy trying to figure out why I still have chest congestion after 2 weeks. I'm trying not to get hypochondria about it. I'm trying not to fester. As I said, I went to the Russian baths to clear it.
What do you
now
think
I
it is?
Know.
You think it's cancer?
Shut up. Shut up. What do I need that for? You think I need that? There's already a few voices. Huh? No. There's already a few voices in my head saying that. I don't need one more. I don't need someone saying it on the radio. I got four voices in my head saying it's cancer. I don't need you doing it. You understand?
What's the fifth guy saying?
He's saying, just go back to sleep.
Yeah, there you go.
Does the fifth guy always say? There's the three that say it's cancer. There's one guy saying, maybe we should sleep some more. And then the other guy that's just saying, kill yourself. And then there's the other one that says, help the guy. Help the guy in the subway. Give him $1.
Which guy do you normally listen to? Because I'm thinking the fourth guy.
Which one do I listen to? Man, I'm just trying to level off of my own personality. Do you understand? I have no room for this noise anymore, Chris. I have no room for it. So I guess people should be happy. Gas prices are down.
Don't even get me started on gas prices.
Why?
Dude, my whirlwind weekend of fun, we started with the summons, and Saturday morning I was woken up to the fact that my car window was smashed in.
Welcome to New York, my friend.
Yeah, thank you very much.
What did you leave in there? Was there a nickel on the seat?
Nothing.
Those guys will break in for anything. It's unbelievable. You can take everything out of your car, and there'd just be like 3 pennies. And for some reason, to some guy looking in your window, he thinks, that must mean there's gold under the seat. There's probably a treasure chest in the trunk if I just break into this car.
They popped the trunk, and they took out my 2 bags of industrial-size charcoal.
See?
They took charcoal!
Dude, you're missing a barbecue. Someone's having a good time at your expense.
What
they
is
knew.
It coming to?
What's it coming to? Hell, you're lucky they didn't start the barbecue in the back of your car.
Yeah, I am lucky.
Most people don't have to deal with this. This is one of the joys of living in New York, is walking out on the street and going, is it broken? No. Yes. And you know, people put those signs in their cars. I have nothing. Then they just break it out of resentment, out of spite. Yeah, now you have a broken window.
I'm just going to put a picture of myself saying, please. You know, I have nothing,
it's
empty
not
pockets.
The picture yourself, that's really going to help. Someone's just going to hit that with a rock just for fun.
Oh,
see who's crying now. It's 6 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Air America's Morning Sedition Program. Mark Riley out for the day. How's it going, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives? Good morning. Good morning, Kalo, P.W. McDonald,
good
Dan
morning,
Pashman,
buddy.
Son
you
of Lewis and Linda Pashman. I woke you up. You just woke up just now. That's good to know. And what have you been doing for the last hour? Where have you been at?
You know,
how's it been going?
What's going on? Juice woke me up.
Oh, man. I need more juice. I went to Whole Foods yesterday. Whole Foods. My wife likes to call it Whole Paycheck. Unbelievable. It's such a pretty place, but it's very expensive.
How much did you spend there?
Only $80.
$80. And how many bags did you leave with?
I got a thing of juice and some vegetables.
So one bag.
$80. Hey, here's some good news for Americans out there in the world of the America today. Apparently, gas prices are down by about 6.4 cents per gallon. That's good news for next weekend's travel weekend, Memorial Day. Also, this was encouraging to me. About 4 in 5 Americans want the Senate to thoroughly examine the president's nominees to be federal judges. This is shared by Democrats and Republicans, which shows me as much as people don't really care, we had a Pew poll last week that said people don't really care one way or the other about the filibuster. They don't know the nuances of it. But they would like the Senate to behave as it has for the last 200 years. They don't want these neocon death cult dudes to just change the rules to suit their agenda at the moment. That's encouraging to me. The reason, as we all know, the filibuster is in place is to protect the minority from majority tyranny, from being steamrolled completely. Look, if they want to fight this out, if they want to, you know, it's up to them. It's up to, if the Republicans want to, you know, put in this nuclear option, Democrats will probably hold up Senate business forever. There's all these different people jockeying, you know, business interests are saying, well, if they do the nuclear option, then we're screwed because they're not going to honor our agenda. And, you know, Democrats are saying, if you do this, if you don't do this, we're going to filibuster until, you know, these nominees go away or until we have an appropriate debate. So I think they should keep the filibuster in place. Why change things now, you know, just to serve their ridiculous agenda to put activist judges in power? And also, the Newsweek issue is becoming, you know, it still continues to be very prominent in the public's mind at this today. Newsweek released an editorial that says it no longer will use anonymous sources as the sole attribution for an article. Now, anonymous sources, as you know, remember, you know, all the president's men. Deep Throat. Anonymous source.
That was on last night? That was on last night. I watched it.
That's a reason. That's part of the great liberal conspiracy that I am proud to be part of. That's why they put it on. That's why. Because they want to remind people that's where news comes from. If you don't have the sources that you can protect, how are you going to get any news?
Exactly.
I think that Newsweek just buckled and whimpered in the face of White House coercion. They should have stood by Isikoff, which they did kind of, but not really. They retracted it. They didn't say it wasn't true because it is true. And if all magazines do this, if all TV stations do this, with PBS being taken over by Republicans, I mean, where are we going to get any real information?
In America.
Well, yeah. Well, hopefully. I mean, people are very relieved by the tone at which we approach the truth. But, I mean, the scary thing is that some people think they're not living in reality now because their instincts and their ideas of what is true are not being honored. And if you cut people off from the truth, a lot of people will just buy it and become, you know, Christo-fascist zombies or zombies of one sort or another, consumerist zombies, whatever you want. But there's going to be a lot of people that think they're going to lose their mind, that will feel like they're going crazy, which I feel a lot of times. Anyways, Newsweek, the stories are true, all right? The Red Cross says it's true that people were, that Qurans were abused. And the American military Muslim chaplain who was at Guantanamo says it's true. The American military translator who was at Guantanamo says it's true. Many detainees have eyewitness accounts say that it's true, that the abuse of the Quran was prevalent. But the Pentagon is the only one that says it isn't true. So why is it not true just because they say it isn't true? I mean, come on, common sense and a little bit of investigative speculation could lead anybody. I'm not even a journalist, obviously, would know that it was true. It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. I mean, if they're going to use dogs, you know, if they're going to use, if they're going to, you know, cut the beards off of these guys who have beards for religious reasons, if they're going to have women go in and interrogate these guys using fake menstrual blood to make them impure in the face of their God, I mean, how is it that they didn't start with, like, why don't we throw the Quran away first? It would seem to save them a lot of time and effort, unless those women who were interrogating these guys with fake menstrual blood were into theatrics. You know, there's no, you know, who knows? You know, maybe that's what they like to do. But, I mean, it's not the real crime is, and I think this is something I want to say again, is that the neocons and the Republicans always accuse us of being, you know, whiners, liberals of being, you know, complainies. You know, but, I mean, not taking responsibility. This is the fault of the administration creating this climate, and not taking responsibility for it is really childish. I mean, what's more childish than going, you know, I didn't break it, it just fell. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. It was that girl with the leash's fault. I mean, that to me is, you know, truly childish behavior. Also, the Laura Bush was in the Middle East at the Dome of the Rock, I guess, sweeping up, preparing for the second coming. I don't know. It always gives me a creep when she goes there in a black shroud, you know, walking around these holy sites, you know, looking sort of towny-ish as she does. Looking like a strange robot. And, you know, of course she's going to get heckled. She doesn't even, you know, pay any mind to it. But it creeps me out that I was at the Dome of the Rock, and I just think that because of her affiliation with the Antichrist, who is now running this country, that something bad, you know, is going to happen. But apparently, you know, she was heckled. But here's what I want to talk about. You know,
Baron, were you heckled when you went to the Dome of the Rock?
No, I wasn't heckled. It
really?
Was, you know, because that space up there is I thought it was very heavy, man. I, you know, although it is like it's like the third holiest shrine in Islam, it is where the temple, the next temple is supposed to be rebuilt. It's very loaded with conspiracy sort of dogma, you know, in terms of like a lot of things need. That's why a lot of evangelical groups funnel money into Jerusalem is to get the temple rebuilt on the Dome of the Rock site, which will never be torn down. And this is like it's a never-ending cycle of tension that needs to lead up to the Messiah's second coming. But you go up to that area up there, the Dome of the Rock site, man, it's like it's heavy. You can feel the weight of thousands of years of conflict and religious weirdness on that area because it's real spacious. And oddly, you know, Islamic art, the art of the Dome of the Rock, is much more appealing in a lot of ways than some of the other stuff around Jerusalem. It's very ornate. It's very it's beautiful. There's a lot of gold. It's a very stunning thing. So when we come back, we are going to be talking to Andy Richter. Many of you know him. He was the sidekick on Conan O'Brien initially. I mean, I know him well because I did that show so many times. He's seen me with a lot of different haircuts and a lot of different jokes and a lot of different outfits on. But he was always a great guy to me, and I'm looking forward to having him in the studio here. So stay tuned for that. We will be back. It is Air America Radio, 13 past the hour.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Personal injury claim and have no place else to turn for the money. Call Whitehaven Funding at 1-800-559-6805. Call today.
Hey, 18 past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley out for the day. We know a lot of people out there are out of work, and you spent your Sunday leafing through the want ads or monster.com. We want to help. We want to help be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here's our Morning Sedition Monday Help Wanted listing. Wanted, sensitive interrogators / Koran handlers. The U.S. military is looking for a few good men or women who know how to treat a religious book with reverence and respect while still being able to kick the living crap out of the people who hold it sacred. Can you cause another human being excruciating pain while still honoring their most sacred text? Can you turn a person's knees to pudding while respecting their feelings? Are you able to treat someone's religious beliefs with dignity while savagely mauling their testicles? As soldiers in the war on terror, the last thing we need is to offend the people we are torturing. Remember, your actions will help mold the image of the United States abroad, and it's vitally important that you retain the proper cultural sensitivities while waterboarding someone. There you go. Also, in the case of the inevitable, we seek people who know the Islamic protocols involved in handling a dead body. Positions are available now in barbed wire-ringed compounds the world over, from sunny Guantanamo to Sunni Iraq, and from Uzbekistan to countries who refuse to be named. There you go. Not a great reading, but that's that. In the studio with me now is a guy who used to, you know, he used to do talk shows. He spent 6 years on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, which earned him 5 consecutive Emmy nominations. You've seen him in plenty of movies like Elf, Scary Movie 2, and in his own TV show, Andy Richter Controls the Universe. This is the Andy Richter who is now doing an animated voice in this movie that's coming out, right?
Yes, I do.
And the movie is called Madagascar.
Yes, it is.
And you play a rat.
Well, no, I play a lemur. Which is sort of like if a monkey had sex with a squirrel.
I like lemurs. I've always been a fan of lemurs when I go to the zoo.
Yeah, really?
Yes, I'm a fan of lemurs. I'm also very engaged with sloths. I like sloths.
Sloths are nice, although sloths are less cuddly because of the claws.
They're freakish.
Yeah.
Did you ever just look at a sloth when you were a kid and go, that's scary and weird, and why is he moving like that?
Every childhood memory of mine is repressed.
Really?
So I don't have any. I have no recollection.
No recollection of zoo experiences?
Mm-mm.
Monkeys?
No, nothing.
It's all gone.
Nothing. Just kind of like I'll get heartburn when I think about it. That's all I think. That's all. To me, that's what it's just a heartburn.
So when people go, so when you were 7, you immediately like, oh, yeah.
I'm burning.
Yeah. Prilosec,
where are you?
Burning bad, something dark. Yeah, I understand that. It's hard for me as well. So in preparing for an animated voice, you just did a Russian accent for me effortlessly off when we were off the air. Could you do it one more time?
Sure. Like I said, it's the key to Russian accents is Boris and Natasha.
Mm.
It's just moose and squirrel.
That's it.
Yeah.
That sounds like my driver.
Darling.
Right. Yeah.
And
okay.
That too, yeah.
He never said darling to me.
Darling.
No, that
good
would be
morning, weird. Darling.
That would be awkward. I would feel strange, and I'd
especially if he was in the back seat when you got in. Good morning, darling. Who's going to drive?
This is weird. I'm going to have to start repressing my mornings.
That's right.
So, do you have a point of reference for all accents in terms of doing your acting work that are cartoons or people that you know? By any chance?
No, not really. I don't consider myself like some big accent guy because there's some that I can't do very well.
Mm.
Like if I ever get hired to do something kind of seriously,
yeah,
you know, say like I got hired to play a guy who grew up on Cape Cod. I'd be lost.
How are you?
Yeah, and I could maybe do it, you know, how are you?
How are
you? Caught in the yard, you know, for a minute.
But didn't you have a weird accent in New York minute? Wasn't
yeah,
that?
I had, yeah, Chinese, well, you know, speaking English with a Chinese accent. It was just pure racism is what it was. It was just, and I, no, there was a scene. It was supposed to be like a Caucasian guy who was raised by the Chinese mafia.
Oh, okay.
And
was it like Jerry Lewis? Like,
absolutely. It was, you know, so good to see you. Come over here. Aside from having a child that eats like he's angry at me, and needing the job,
yeah.
I thought, when am I ever going to get a chance to be in a movie where I get to play it? And it's like, there were scenes where, because of it was my mother who was the head of the Chinese mafia.
Okay.
The Tong, I imagine. We never said Tong
in
New York Minute. That's far too
complicated.
Way too History Channel, you know.
Make fun
Chinese
voices
mafia.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like saying Chinese spaghetti. we did a scene in a nail salon with real Chinese extras, and that's when I realized, you know, when it's just me and Mary Kate and Ashley, shooting somewhere, and I'm doing, so, get in the car, I'll drive you to town. Then it was okay, but as soon as I was, you know, having to do a whole scene, you know, like, I'm sorry, Ma, I'll get them, I'll kill them, you know, that's when I was really, like,
glaring.
I looked around and they're all like laughing. They all loved it, you know. Like, all right, but I, you know,
thinking their hateful thoughts.
I know, but that's just that could just be because people are always happy to be paid as actors.
Or else they're it could be the same thing that happens at any Asian restaurant that you go into. It's like, can I help you?
Yeah.
So you have a child that eats like he's angry. At
yes,
you?
Yes. He's well, that's just what I say.
How old is he now?
He's four. He's 4 years old.
Is he going to be able to see Madagascar and
he already
and enjoy
did.
It?
We went to the we went to the premiere.
Was he able to guess which one daddy was?
He knew, but I still don't fully. He said he's able to tell people, "Daddy does the voice of Mort," but yeah. I don't really think that he. I don't think that he understands completely that that's.
How
yeah,
it works,
the cartoon
perhaps?
Is
right.
That there's drawings that people then go into a studio and say the words, and then the two things are married, the
so
image
just,
and the sound.
He thinks it's still magic?
I think he might think I'm a shapeshifter. And then when he goes to bed, I can become a lemur. You know?
So when you're actually watching the movie with him, did he keep looking at you?
No, he's he doesn't. He actually does not like to go to movies very much because it's sensory overload to him still. It's still going into a dark room. Well, first of all, try to relate to him from the small creature perspective.
Yeah.
And there's still, on some level, he's still probably got to be concerned with being eaten.
Sure.
Just because he's so
by the
little.
Big thing up there.
Yeah, by the big things that are all over the place. And so you go into a dark room, being a small creature, and it's that in itself is like probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
And then you've got this huge wall of noise and color and explosions and because the first few times we tried to take him to the movie, he just was like, you could see just circuits overloading, like,
freaking
too
out.
Too much.
Yeah. Well, you remember when we were kids? It was before Lucas sound and sense, and the sound, just the sound in some movies. It's brain-bending.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it frightens me as an adult. I cry.
My wife is pregnant. She's about
How many do you have? The second
four. Yeah, we're going to have two. And we went to see Kingdom of Heaven a couple weekends ago, and she actually said that the sound almost, she felt like it was putting her into labor. She actually, for a moment, was like, I think I better get out of here. I'm going to have a premature child in my lap.
Well, let's listen to a clip from your new movie, Madagascar. Can we do that? This is Andy Richter playing Mort the Lemur.
I liked them first. I was the first one to like them. I saw them. I liked them right away. Before they came, I saw them in my mind's eye, and I liked them very much.
That's Andy Richter as Mort in the animated film Madagascar, which opens this Friday, May 27th. It also stars Chris Rock and Ben Stiller. Let's talk a little bit more about the movie, and also I need some advice about hosting a talk show. It's 27 past the hour.
Good comes of that. And that's what is happening now. It is disgusting.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's the morning's edition on Air America Radio. Riley is out for the day. We got the morning remembrance coming up with Mort Mortensen to see who he deemed important enough to honor in his obituaries. I'm still here with Andy Richter, formerly of Late Night with Conan O'Brien, currently of Madagascar, the new DreamWorks animated film. All right, buddy. All right, Andy. I've been hosting this talk show for it's been a little more than a year, and I got to be honest with you, it was not easy at the beginning.
Right, 3 months. And I had no idea just how difficult it really was until I saw myself on television in this documentary about the network.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized that you also were on a talk show that was brand new.
Right.
And no one knew. How did you feel during the beginning, when you were on the Conan O'Brien show, just like, you know, the weird skidding that you must have felt at least for a half a year?
Yeah. Oh, it was more than that. Well, see, I was lucky enough to not have to carry the bulk of the interviewing.
Yeah.
You know, there were people who would say to me, like, you know, compliment me on how funny I was, as if it was some sort of competition among all the people involved.
Yes.
Usually, and I would think, and sometimes say, like, well, it's easy because I'm like a designated hitter,
right?
But a designated hitter who gets to choose when he goes to
bat. You right.
know, I can sit there and I would say sometimes, because, you know, there's the monologue, and then there's what we call the desk bit, and
yeah.
then there's usually the top of act one comedy, then there's two acts of interview, and then there's the middle act bit. And frequently I would not be sort of written into those bits.
Yeah.
And I used to say to the floor director all the time, I used to say, like, you know, if I play my cards right, I don't have to say a word tonight. And there were some shows where I really did go, he'd say, you know, Andy, how you doing? Pretty good. How are you? And that would be it until the end of the show. And depending on if I was in a cranky mood or you know, whatever.
And that's hilarious because I've never heard or seen anybody say a negative word about Andy Richter.
Oh, really?
In terms of the Conan O'Brien show.
Absolutely.
Oh. But, you know, in terms of, you know, other stuff.
Right. Man, I know.
You want me to get the list out?
Yeah.
But,
I'm handsy.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
In all truth, I've never heard anyone say anything bad about you. But I just realized that is true, that the host is obviously going to take all the hits,
yeah,
know, whether
yeah.
he deserves them or not.
Right.
And you probably got a lot of this, like, man, sorry, dude, you got to, you got to sit there and do this.
Yeah. Right? No, I was always like, well, are you kidding? I just sit here, and it's like, and there would be, and the only sort of thing is that there are times when you got something to say, like something, and then the moment passes and it just is sort of wasted. So there is like wasted
right.
material just because of timing. You don't want to go, wait, back up, guys.
Yes.
You know that thing you were saying about shirt?
You can't do that. But then, but it is true that then there's a lot of times too, and especially like if Conan and I were, you know, being crabby with each other, yeah. and there'd be a bad interview. It was yeah. just so much fun, you know, like to just kind of like having fun, Conan. I'm not, and he'd look at me and like, help me out. I'm like, no, no, I won't.
How often did that happen?
Oh, not that often. Not that often.
You miss
I miss working there. I miss because, but it's mostly a lot of it is it's more like a New York LA thing,
sure.
and it's more like a prime time versus late night thing because. Yeah. You know, we were left so alone. There was such a serious lack of adult supervision on the Conan show because we're in New York. All the real jerks of the, you know, the corporate people are in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so we would have, and, you know, it was more like you were neglected children who had parents who were jet setters, who
right.
would come home every once in a while and yell at you.
Right.
You know, but then they'd be gone.
And they'd buy you suits and things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They could buy you suits. But yeah. And it was way worse in the beginning because there were network executives who were, like, some guy that was just, like, Don Olmeyer's pal.
Yeah.
And he was in charge of the studio or something.
Right.
And he knew nothing. He was just, he's like one of those, like Gucci loafer with no socks kind of guy,
yeah,
and
yeah.
then always khaki pants and navy blazer with brass buttons,
yeah.
you know, just and would come in and his solution to Conan would be things. He would always say things like, "You gotta put some energy in it. You gotta run up into the audience." He would say that every time. Run up into the audience, like, and then what? That was, and Conan actually was there once. And I was like, and then what? You know, just liven it up. Like, oh, okay. What a great idea. But that guy left. But initially there were people that just treated him like garbage.
But
just treated him so badly.
Who, Conan?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know. It was rough. But he seems okay. You guys talk still?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's it. What you were saying before is interesting, is that, you know, it's good to work. You know, like, I mean, on some level, because I used to see you over there. I mean, I did the show a lot. And as busy as it got, like, this is the first job I've had that is as demanding as it is.
Right.
But I like to work. When I'm working, it's great.
Oh, me too.
It's much nicer than sitting around wondering, like, when the hell work's going to come.
That's kind of what I'm dealing with right now. And that's one of the things that I miss.
And doing that in L.A.?
Work. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because when you're not working in L.A., you feel like everybody is secretly just going, and he's not working.
Right, right. Well, no, what you do is because I do things. I play golf.
Oh,
and
well,
so
that's
I'll
good.
Go to, well, but I'll go to the, like, you know, I had these days where I dropped my son off at preschool and then, like, oh, what now? you know, because the answer could be, like, go home and work on that screenplay. But, yeah. I mean, that would really sort of help me out and make sense.
No.
So instead it's, I guess I could go to the driving range. And then I go, and there are these guys, and you just know by the way they carry themselves that they're sort of voiceover guys or something. And they're there. They're, you know, 47 years old. They probably lived in L.A. for 15 years. They've been making, scraping together 40 grand a year for the last. And you just feel like, that is me. That's my future. Like this guy, you know, wearing Ross, dress for less shoes.
Chemical peeled face.
Yeah. They just like sort of like that bare subsistence level of show business that you can do. And the thing out there, too, is it's like you can do it because the weather's nice.
Sure.
You know, like if you're making 40 grand doing, you know, a couple of walk-on spots on WB sitcoms, you know, you've. Two or three of those, and you got yourself a salary.
You're renting a guest house in Malibu,
or apartment in Woodland Hills, in which you're the youngest person in the building by 35 years.
Sadly, we're going to run out of time here in a second, and I don't want to. I want to do the movie justice.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I want to do the movie justice.
Madagascar.
Now this is a challenging film
about a friendship.
Oh.
Yeah.
Between?
Animals. It's interspecial friendship.
Aww.
Namely about a lion and a zebra who are pals.
Uh-huh.
And, it's about zoo animals. Four zoo animals, a lion, a zebra, a hippo,
and a giraffe. Yet another movie about a lion, a zebra, a hippo, and a giraffe.
Here we go again.
And they escape from the zoo and are sort of sent back to the wild, but they end up falling off a ship and ending up on the beach of Madagascar.
Do any of them get lost in the storm?
They all get lost in the storm.
Die? Do they die?
No, nobody dies.
Because it's for
nobody kids. Dies. Yeah, and there's sort of a there's a whole subplot about carnivore herbivore friendship.
Oh.
And how they can sort of become friends. Which the way they become friends mm-hmm. is eating fish.
That's what I'm doing.
Fish yeah. apparently are they don't have. Which is, I always love this in cartoons.
Yeah.
Where how, like Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse can have a pet dog, and I'm sure that there's a million stand-ups that have done bits on this.
I don't know any. But
Mickey Mouse has his pet dog.
Yeah.
Pluto.
Yeah.
But then he's also got a pal who can talk and drive a car who's a dog.
Goofy.
Called Goofy.
Sure.
And that somehow there's this, like, well, some dogs are retarded and remain dogs, and other dogs, well, I mean, he's Goofy, still mildly retarded, but he at least has, you know, enough human stuff. And that's the way this is. Like, you know, like, the lemurs are cute, and you don't want to eat them.
Right.
But fish, apparently, eat all you want.
So, yeah, well, that's, you know, it's interesting, because now we'll get mail. You don't realize the diversity of my audience, because I recently... I stopped eating meat,
uh-huh.
and I've just, you know, been eating fish,
right.
and literally two or three emails. Well, what about the fish's feelings? Fish feel pain?
Who cares?
Oh, beautiful. Andy Richter, thanks for being with us.
All right, thanks.
The movie is Madagascar. It's got the voice of Chris Rock, Ben Stiller, and, of course, Andy Richter, who plays Mort the lemur. And we've got our very own Mort. Coming up, it's Mort Mortensen with Morning Remembrance. Up next, it's 44 past the hour right now. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. We can't do it without you. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
866-800-957-6066. Not available in all states.
Forty-nine past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley out today. Man, I've been a little cranky. All morning, man. What is it with me? Dan Pashman, son of Lisa Linda Pashman, New Jersey, in the room with me now. How are you, Dan?
All right.
In just a second, we're going to get to the morning remembrance, but I just want to reflect just how powerful Monday morning can be. Man!
It's been a little up and down, but I feel you pulling through. I'm very excited.
Yeah, a lot of people are just tuning in, so there's no reason to let them know that it's been, it hasn't been bad. It's just been a little up and down.
Oh, it's been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been tremendous. I mean, there were some revelations, some exciting personal things, some weird mood shifts. We had Andy Richter on. And
he was really good.
I think he cheered me up. I think that's what happened.
Totally.
It's very hard to be, to be upset around Andy Richter, because he's got sort of a buoyant, kind of almost childish Buddha. Like energy.
He's somewhat cherubic.
Yes, he is. And he's always been very, very nice to me. And, you know, it's an interesting segue we're going to make now, because unfortunately it's that time of the week again when we here at Morning's Edition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning's Edition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Already?
Yeah.
All right.
Paul Keene, organic farming pioneer. Mark?
Yeah.
Paul Keene, the former mathematics professor and avowed pacifist, organic farmer who, quote, just wanted to get back to the land, got his wish last month when he was buried in it. I'm allergic to land.
Yeah. I had that feeling.
Yeah. In the late 1930s, while teaching in northern India, Keene got met Mohandas Gandhi, whose belief in simple living inspired Keene to get the hell out of India and start a multi-million-dollar business.
Yeah, as it will.
I had some curry this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you're not allergic to curry.
Well, it makes me teary-eyed.
Oh, a little bit, but not allergic.
No, not allergic. I don't sneeze or anything. I don't get any asthma. Just make me... Oh, well.
You can be. You want him Kleenex?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, man. Just want, let's take care of it. He knows he's running over. It's messy.
So emotional.
Yeah, I understand. It's a hard job you have.
More than half a century, Keene's Walnut Acres Farm produced an array of products, including peanut butter, granola, and instruction booklets on how to sit cross-legged on the lawn, wearing earth shoes, and playing a flute while deflecting rocks thrown by the cool kids. In the 1940s and 50s, Keene's views on organic farming were considered eccentric, so much so that people labeled him with a communist and even burned crosses on his lawn, incidents that probably led to his debut of the world's first organic urine-based fire extinguisher.
No, come on.
Yes, it's organic, urine-based.
Yeah, I can. It's horrifying.
Allergic to urine.
Yeah. How would you go to the bathroom?
I can't. Keene requested his remains be buried with sea salt and love.
Aww. Yeah.
Henry Corden, voice of Fred Flintstone.
Aww.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Henry Corden, who for almost 30 years was famous for voicing the character of Fred Flintstone with his iconic Yabba Dabba Doo, is Yabba Dabba dead? In addition to the popular children's slash adult-oriented cartoon series, Corden also supplied his voice for a string of specials such as The Flintstones Get New Neighbors, Fred's Final Fling, and Fred and Barney Get Gonorrhea Stone. Gonorrhea Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Gonorrhea Stone.
Yeah. Speaking of stones, I'm allergic to marble dust.
Marble dust? Yeah. What the hell is marble dust?
You gotta see, I go to museums.
Oh,
Corden reportedly died of multiple puncture wounds after trying to shave himself with a clamshell full of bumblebees and use a porcupine as a hairbrush.
That'll do it.
That'll do it right away.
Yeah.
Corden's unrealistically requested his remains be interred inside the beak of a priceless pterodactyl skeleton. There he goes. Oh. Anyway, this is this has been this morning's remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Morton's saying. Who's chopping onions?
Wow, that was touching, man.
Yeah.
Can we get another nose blow? How do you?
Yeah, all right. Thanks for allowing
it. It's running. You know,
it's very nice of you to allow this.
It's like a noise. That was really helpful. Me, all right?
Oh, God.
That was pretty harsh, but thanks for being with us, Mort. It's always nice when you come on to reflect a little bit. It's a tough job you have, man.
Reflection is hard to do, as you well know. You've been reflecting a lot this morning. And it's arduous, and it can really...
My reflection is arduous, is what you're saying? I understand.
When you look into yourself.
Let me be honest with you. I had a great weekend, and sometimes when someone came up to me. Here's what happened.
Right.
All right, you know what we do here. We're here on our show, on Morning's Edition, and I'm having a good weekend. And sometimes I feel bad for having a good weekend, because here's what happens. A woman walks up to me and goes, "You're Mark Maron. I really love your show. I love what you guys are doing there on Air America. It's just great because things are so bad." And there's that moment where I'm like, man, things are bad, aren't they? Can I just go to the movies? Can I just have a weekend? And then, you know, I come in, I was a little cranky, but I don't think that's unusual. As I said, it's very hard for me to get used to this whole Monday morning thing. How about you, Mort? Were you always a guy that worked during the week? Mondays are a little difficult for everybody, aren't they?
I went into stand-up comedy right after college, so I've never had a real
that's
job.
That's exactly it. The same with me. Still adjusting a year later. I get in here, I look at the papers, I look at the news, I talk to Dan and P.W. McDonald in the booth, and I'm like, I don't care! care. I want to go home. This is ridiculous. What do I got to care about this for?
I'd like to be one of those $40,000, $50,000 a year walk-on guys that Richter was talking
about. Is that what you're making, though, for these Morton and the Milfington characters and everything else?
No, I'm getting, you know, gratuities, like free drinks and a donut every morning.
That's it?
Yeah.
And you still come in early and do all that work?
Wait, you don't pay for that donut?
Huh? Hey, what the?
Pashman!
Pashman, you, Ayana! Yeah.
We'll miss him.
Man, we're going to talk to, we've got some interesting things coming up on the show momentarily, within minutes.
The iNews is coming up.
Kitty Kelly is going to come up and dish the dirt on the Bush family.
Kitty Kelly?
Yes, apparently there's some new dirt in the paperback edition of her tell-all book, the scandalous book. About the Bushes, she's got all the good dirt.
Oh, it is scandalous. Yeah, you hear what she has to say.
And I'm going to ask her about the blow use. And the parties and the philandering.
She knows all about it.
Oh, she's the one who knows everything about it. And I guess we're going to talk to you, Pashman, as well a little later.
Cool.
And also we're going to continue our conversation. I want to I'm going to talk a little bit about where all that Homeland Security money's going. Because this slush fund mean anything to you? It's slushy, isn't it? Is that the word, slushy?
That is the word,
Mark.
We'll
be back on Air America Radio. That's the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Edition program. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. He's out today. I don't know what he's up to, but he's out. He'll be back. Everything's cool, so don't worry about it. You know, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have this Wi-Fi, what is it, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator right here. So let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. All right, from the Chicago Tribune. Cheers, jeers, Greek Bush at graduation. How about that? Cheers, jeers, Greek Bush at graduation. Translation, Bush encourages students to follow his lead and not work in government. From Fox News, Warren Beatty jabs at Schwarzenegger's leadership. Translation, aging gigolo attacks ineffective cyborg. How about this? Let's put it back in there. All right. How about this? Beatty says his complete lack of experience superior to Arnold's complete lack of experience.
The first one better.
Okay. What do you want me to do? Have the machine take it back? I can only do so much here. Do you know what I mean? Is there a reverse on this? From Washington Times, Dean defends imitation of Limbaugh. Translation, Dean says it's not hilarious yet, but give me a couple weeks. Dean found strung out on OxyContin, claims he was getting into character. Like, it's not hard enough. It's Monday and Riley's not here. You got to sit there and not even laugh.
The machine's not even done right, whipping it out, and you're saying it.
What are you saying? That it's just an effect that I'm using on a board? It's just making a sound and I'm pretending that?
No. What I'm saying is, you're feeding it to the machine. Well, look at the machine.
Can we look at the machine, okay. Chris? See, it feeds the tape out and I can sort of read it as it comes out and before the noises. Can I have some...
Freedom?
All right. I am going to try to put out some information that people might find interesting there, Kalo.
Cool.
That isn't necessarily about me or about my weekend. It's about my concern about where our money goes, my friend. The Homeland Security Department, I think, if I'm understanding this story properly, did you see Goodfellas?
Of course.
You know when the mob takes over that guy's restaurant and they just start running stuff through it to make money until they close the thing down?
Yeah, of course.
This is exactly how the Homeland Security Department works.
What are you talking about?
Apparently, Tom Ridge was overseeing this department, and right after 9/11, all this money goes in the Homeland Security Department. Everyone's freaking out. We got to secure the nation. We got to secure everything. Everything needs to be secure. Here's billions of dollars they put through the Homeland Security Department to contractors, to not defense contractors, but security contractors who have ideas. ideas. But no one, apparently there's like 12 guys working at Homeland Security. They're trying to manage hundreds of millions of dollars. And these guys, these pitch guys are coming, come on, we need this money. Give us the money so we can secure the borders. Give us the money so we can make the airport safe. We got these newfangled machines that make this sound. Okay? That will secure the airport, all right? But the truth of the matter is that a lot of this stuff was half-baked. A lot of it was not effective. A lot of the technology was crap. And so all this money was put out through the Homeland Security Department. And look, here's where we stand. Listen to this. Last year, in a confidential report prepared for the House Homeland Security Committee by a GAO auditor on loan to the panel, the entire Homeland Security Department was deemed to be at high risk of failure. The auditor noted in his report, a copy of which was obtained by the Post, that without a stronger management system, the agency will not have the ability to effectively protect our homeland at all. And apparently there was like $1 billion, $1.2 billion. Financial controls were so lax, this auditor, okay, said that he was unsure whether a $1.2 billion budget shortfall was real or simply an accounting irregularity. How can there be a $1.2 billion, like, I don't know, is this where's this money? Does anyone know where this money is? How does this happen? And apparently, if you go down the list of where we stand now, in terms of safety, the contract to hire airport passenger screeners grew to $741 million from $104 million in less than a year. The screeners are failing to detect weapons at roughly the same rate as shortly after the attacks at 9/11. All right? The contract for airport bomb detecting machines ballooned to at least $1.2 billion from $508 million over 18 months. The machines have been hampered by like high false alarm rates. A contract for a computer network called U.S. Visit to screen foreign visitors could cost taxpayers $10 billion. It relies on outdated technology that puts the project at risk. Wow. But this is like billions of dollars going through this thing. Someone made that money. Probably, companies that are affiliated with the Republican machine. Someone made that money. They just funneled all this money right through to companies. And they went into partnerships. Government people within the Homeland Security Department went into partnerships with these businesses, which you should never have. There should be someone overseeing that, because they'll just, they'll drain the government of the money, which is exactly what Republicans want to do. That stuff like that just drives me nuts, because no one is that much safer. The borders aren't that much safer, and this technology is untried, yet someone made off like a bandit.
Yep, and we're still going to be paying into the Homeland Security Fund, which is, where is that money going?
Exactly.
It's...
I'm coming up with an idea. I'm just going to come up with a security idea. Like, maybe you should give me $100,000 a year. Let's make it more. How about $10 million a year, and I'll just kind of hang out. I'll move back to New Mexico. I'll go down to the bottom of New Mexico and just walk around and go, yeah, this is good here. No one's coming in over here. All right, so here's some good news. Gas prices are in a downward trend, apparently 6.4 cents per gallon down from, just a couple weeks ago, which is good if you're traveling this weekend.
Yeah, maybe my window doesn't get smashed in. I'll take a nice little drive out to Jersey.
There's nothing I can do about that. What are you going to do about the window? You just got to go to the glass place. It's covered. It's probably deductible.
No, it's actually not covered.
How is it not covered?
Under liability, it's not covered. It comes out of my own pocket. So
it gets to the point when you have a car in New York, depending on what neighborhood you live in, you go to the auto glass place, and the guy goes, what? Well, maybe you ought to get a garage, do something, move, I don't know, get out of there.
We'll be on a first-name basis. It's bad.
So, also, I want to address the Newsweek issued an editorial that says it will no longer use anonymous sources as sole attribution for an article. That means that they are not going to use – this is a staple of journalism. If this wasn't used, there'd be no Watergate. There'd be no all the president's men. We would never know anything about that. This is what, journalists do. They protect their sources if it's true. And the truth of the matter is, it was true. They just retracted it because they wussed out. They wussed out under the coercion of the White House, and they retracted the story, but it's been proven that it's true. The Red Cross says it was true.
Laura Flanders had someone on our show, a former Guantanamo Bay detainee.
That's exactly it. The American military Muslim chaplain said it was true. An American military translator said it was true. Multiple detainees, eyewitness accounts say it was true. But the Pentagon say it isn't true, so they decide that it's not true. Yet, if they want to put a name to it, Martin Mubanga, a former Guantanamo Bay detainee, who was released in January, all charges against him were dropped, and he returned to his home in the UK. Over 3 years in detention, he says he experienced and witnessed multiple acts of abuse of the Quran, starting in the early months of 2002, and he was interviewed on Laura Flanders last night. We got that. Let's hear it.
There was two on either side of me holding my wrists as I was kneeling down, and they had them in wrist locks. And one of the three that was searching took my Quran, and then instead of replacing it to its place, he threw that on the floor. They then basically gripped me tighter so that I could not do anything, and they wanted to see if they could provoke a strong reaction from me.
That's horrible, man.
There's your sources, Reek.
But that's like this Martin Mubanga. There's a source, but not even a source. How about to the Pentagon? Now, Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan, because of all this to-do around the Newsweek article, has now decided that he's going to be a politician, and he's demanding justice from the United States over the alleged abuse of two Afghan detainees who reportedly died in American custody. Which is interesting is that he says, quote, "At the same time, I must say that while we condemn this, we show Afghans, we show the rest of the world that the behavior of two soldiers or interrogators must not reflect on the United States or on the U.S. people." Why not? If Americans did it, it should reflect on them. When we come back in a second, we're going to talk about the pictures of Saddam Hussein in his underpants on the cover of the Post and on the cover of the Sun. My initial response was like, that's embarrassing. That's sad. And I know that he is a brutal dictator who killed thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, but still, to be caught in your underpants on the front page of a paper that goes out around the world is a little embarrassing. And apparently some Arabs thought that it would, stir up more, protests
and violence.
And then, of course, George Bush had something to say about it. We'll get into that when we come back. And Kitty Kelly, too, later, just in a little while, 16 past the hour. Stay with us.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here this morning for this on Air America Radio. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. We're talking about the pictures of Saddam Hussein, which appeared on the cover of the Post. It was the Post and the Sun. I got Dan Pashman, son of Louis, and Linda Pashman here in the studio with me.
Hi.
It's interesting that the paper source was quoted as saying, it's important that the people of Iraq see him like that to destroy the myth. And then several Arab commentators suggest that this could increase anti-American feeling in the region. And I think that, destroying the myth is one thing, but on some level it humanizes the guy, on a sympathetic level. I'm not being sympathetic for him, but when I looked at it, that's the feeling I got. And then Bush looks at it, and he says, "I don't think a photo inspires murders. I think they're inspired by an ideology that's so barbaric and backwards that it's hard for many in the Western world to comprehend how they think."
Unless, of course, they're photos of prisoners in a naked pile.
Naked pile with hoods on or with the dogs in front of them.
Unless, of course, it's one sentence about Quran desecration. That
exactly.
Inspires violence. But not these pictures.
Right, but that's different. That's a sentence. Right. See, he draws a line between actual language and pictures.
All right.
But go ahead, Dan.
Well, I want to know, Mark. I mean, I want to ask you, how much worse... All these new allegations come out between the torture and the horrors and then these pictures of Saddam, et cetera, and they keep saying, this is going to make Muslims hate us even more.
Yeah.
I mean, how much more could they hate us?
Yeah, after the snowball effect, but we were talking about on the break was true, is that you get Hamid Karzai saying, we want justice, we want these individuals to pay, we don't want this to tarnish the reputation of the United States. You have the United States administration blaming Newsweek for all these horrors. You get all this blame displacement, Donald Rumsfeld, George Bush not taking responsibility for the culture of torture that was, promoted and maintained in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and in all these places where they rendition terror suspects to other countries. I really think that Barbara Bush, her plane stopped in Egypt before she went to Israel. Maybe she was actually dropping off a few terror suspects in Egypt to be tortured there as a friendly state.
Sure, sure. I mean, it is amazing to me, Mark, that the Bush administration is still, after all of these allegations and all of the irrefutable evidence that has come out, they are still sticking to the few bad apples defense.
Well, they refuse to take responsibility for anything, which is childish and obviously irresponsible. responsible and displacing blame. How much more cowardly could you get? And, the, you know, and what amazes me, Dan, is like sometimes these people still see George Bush as a guy who makes a tough decision, stands by his word. You know, it's sort of a tough love president, tells it like it is. Yet none of them, all the way up to him, are willing to take responsibility for the culture of torture that they created.
That's right. He calls this the ownership society. This is a guy that says he advocates an ownership society. There has been no responsibility. And, Mark, I mean, I think it needs to be stressed how widespread these allegations are. It goes beyond allegations, how widespread this evidence is. We're talking about all of the major war on terror facilities in Iraq and Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay. It's everywhere. And the fact that no one is taking responsibility, and I'd like to call out Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
I mean, not
Patchman's calling out Rumsfeld.
Right.
This is going to happen now.
Yeah. I'm going to take him that. No, not only for the obvious reason, but there was a pivotal moment, Mark, that happened in the immediate days when the first Abu Ghraib allegations came out.
Right.
And if you recall, in those first couple of days, the U.S. media was calling it torture. And Donald Rumsfeld made a statement. It was one sentence, but it is still reverberating throughout media coverage. Rumsfeld said, and I'm paraphrasing what I basically got here. He said, I'm not a lawyer, but I do believe that what's being alleged here is not torture. It's abuse. And since then, U.S. publications, television, media have refused to call it torture. They will only call it abuse.
Prisoner abuse, which is interesting because that's a word primarily used in domestic problems, in
right.
You know, personal problems.
People have a very different reaction.
But well, yeah, because it shifts the frame to the individual as opposed to the nation. Let's take a call in Atlanta. Jeff, what's on your mind, Jeff, listening to WWAA in Atlanta?
Hey, great show. I wake up every morning to listen to it.
Thanks.
Just a quick question, a quick point on the Saddam Hussein treatment and also the other themes of Quran desecration and prisoner torture / abuse. You know, as Oral pointed out, revenge is something that is a powerful motivation and goal when you can't get it. But when it suddenly becomes achievable and a former potentate like Saddam Hussein is in your power, it becomes something that's pathetic, and I think it's all tied back to a misplaced sense of Americans seeking a generalized revenge for what they, or whoever they, did to us on 9/11, and it never helps. These pathetic scenes of, you know, abuse, whether it be the dehumanization of Hussein, which doesn't help the dehumanization he visited upon his victims, it's all misplaced.
Yeah, and so you're saying that the photos are just some sort of, you know, empty tactic?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly how the photos originated, but the fact that they're reproduced, people wanting to, you know, show, okay, here's the former powerful guy now in his underwear and things like that. Well, just think. I mean, he gained power by dehumanizing, often killing, but dehumanizing his victims. And at the same time, we're trying to extract power by, you know, instead of treating him as a war criminal.
All right, continuing to humiliate him. Thanks for your call, Jeff. Well, that's the interesting thing here. But even in this story I'm reading here about the Geneva Conventions, officials emphasize that because it was not a sanctioned government release of photos, the United States is not in violation of the Geneva Conventions, although an individual might be. The military, of course, saying that they weren't responsible, that it wasn't a military guy, but anyone could have taken that picture with their phone, but it was probably a military guy. But even here, they're saying that an individual is going to pay.
Absolutely.
And I believe this is Republican policy on all levels. They also use it to encourage people. You know, it's this whole pull yourself up by your bootstraps is the other side of this, is that you can take control of your life if only you just work at it. And now they're saying the individual also applies when there's blame to be dispersed. The administration won't take any responsibility for it, nor will the military. It's baffling, man. But it's true to who they are. Irresponsible, selfish people that don't care about other people. 27 past the hour. We'll be back. Kitty Kelly is coming up, so stay with us.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
So stuff shirts in Washington with the truth this week on the Al Franken Show
on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. Mark Riley is out today. He'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Did the White House intimidate the media when Kitty Kelly published her book on the Bush family? I'll tell you what, why don't we ask her, the author of The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty, on the phone. Good morning, Kitty Kelly.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. So tell me about this new chapter you added in the paperback edition in reference to the media.
Well, yes, that's the author's afterword.
Okay, all right.
I did tell you all about really what happened to me when I came out last fall with this book, and
what did happen?
The attacks of the White House, the Republican National Committee, Tom DeLay were to be expected.
Right.
What I didn't expect, though, really, were poodles within the mainstream media who sort of took their cues from the White House and backed away. And as we're talking, what is it, May 23rd, 2005, still haven't come up with one error in the book, one misrepresentation, one inaccuracy. They just dismiss it as gossip and trash, but they haven't found anything wrong with the book other than the author.
You've got a reputation for yourself, but, I mean, like you said, there's no one has found anything that was untrue in the book. Now, what do you think of the
you know something?
What?
That's the kind of reputation, Mark, I'll stand up to.
Absolutely. Why not?
I mean, it's an unsparing book. It's hard-hitting, but it is not unfair, and there is nothing inaccurate in it.
This administration bullies the media. They bullied Newsweek into retracting a story that is obviously true. And now Newsweek, which, you know, was a fairly reliable journalistic source, is saying they will not use unnamed sources anymore as the primary source for stories. What do you think of that?
That's a tough one. That is really tough because if journalists cannot use unnamed sources, we will not find out about Watergate.
Exactly.
We will not find out about the abuses of our government. I do know that using anonymous sources is tough. It's really hard. But sometimes, I remember when I did the Frank Sinatra book, I had to use anonymous sources or I couldn't get people to tell me about what happened. The same with the Nancy Reagan book. When you're writing about people who are alive and very powerful, there are sources who really do want to tell the truth, but they're afraid. They're going to lose their job. They're going to be beat up. They're going to be audited. It's very, very tough. On the other hand, you've got to be really careful because an anonymous source will hide behind their anonymity to use their acts.
Wasn't there some people in the book, I don't like Bush. I don't like his administration, so obviously I want to believe everything you've written. Now, wasn't there one of the Bush, Neil Bush's ex-wife, who kind of turned on her story a little bit?
Oh, she turned on it completely. Sharon Bush. I had an interview with her at her suggestion. I met with her and her publicist, Lou Colasuano, and it was about a four-hour lunch, and then Sharon called me again on the phone. She asked me to take her to William Morris. I did that. There was telephone calls after that, and when the book came out, she really got scared, and she backed off.
She got scared of the Bush family.
Oh, she's terrified of them because they're still paying. They're still paying for her.
For whatever.
Children. But I'll tell you, in the back of the book, I wrote Sharon a letter after her really preposterous performance on the Today Show, and told her I was, and I reprinted the letter, and I sent a copy to that man of integrity, Matt Lauer, and said that, you know, I understand that she lied, but it disgusted me. Her story was confirmed by other people. Lou Colasuano sat there during the entire interview, and he affirmed everything that I wrote.
That was her publicist?
That was her publicist.
Yeah, right.
Not mine. So, yes, they stand up and say, it's a lie, I didn't say it. But the fact of the matter, I had a witness there.
So now let me ask you, in all your dealings, in all your research, in all the people you talked to about the Bush family, what was the most surprising thing that you found out?
Two things.
Yeah.
Well, the sense of entitlement throughout the lives of this dynasty. And one good example of that, when George W. Bush, our current president, went to Andover, he kept a Confederate flag on his wall in his room.
Mm-hmm.
Huge Confederate flag. And I interviewed one of the very few African Americans who told me, you know, in 1963 and 64, this was terrifying, more terrifying than it is now, and we know how divisive it is now. And he said he was terrified to go by Bush's room. He found it offensive, and he found it quite frightening. And yet Andover did nothing about it.
Unbelievable. We're talking to Kitty Kelly. The book is The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty. But what about, sir, I want to know a little bit about Laura Bush. I haven't read the book entirely, but you made some claims that she was a pot dealer.
Yes, I got many, many stories from people who talked about Laura Bush. She and her husband are products of that drug generation and have sampled marijuana on many occasions. But what is hard for us to believe now is that when you report something like this that happened in the 60s, and we see her now 40 mm-hmm. years later, and she seems so prim and so proper and it's a little hard. It's dissociative cognizance
yeah.
to realize that she did that, but she did do it.
Now let me ask you something. As a writer, just in your knowledge of the Bush administration, why do you think that nothing sticks to these people? Why do you think that the Americans are willing to forgive them, or a certain number of Americans are willing to forgive them of all these transgressions? Why do you think that Americans are willing to accept this entitled, you know, rich fraud, you know, as their president, or at least, you know, 49% of the Americans, or however many?
Simply because of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that image,
mm-hmm.
the family.
Mm-hmm.
The Bushes have put forward, stood on top of this sanctified image, and this image of cohesiveness and closeness, this ideal American family that other American families probably don't have. And we look up to them because we think there is a solid marriage, George Herbert Walker Bush and Barbara Bush.
Really?
Nobody knows about the mistresses of George Herbert Walker Bush. Barbara Bush had this wonderful white-haired, tough mama, grandmother,
yeah.
all those grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And I really mean this.
Yeah.
That image of the family has been very, very powerful.
But it's so aristocratic. It's not like it's down home or anything.
It's not aristocratic. It is inaccurate. And when you read this book, you realize that this family really has been torn apart many times the same way our families have been torn apart, and they've had to come together. I mean, mm-hmm. there was a period when George and Barbara didn't even speak to George and Laura. They went an entire year because George W. Bush so embarrassed his parents with his drinking that he wasn't allowed around. He did not even come to their anniversary party.
But I think that endearing to a lot of Americans, whereas I think that the connection of George Bush Sr. and the legacy of his father, and where all that money came from, and all the oil money and all the Nazi money and everything else, that, you know, I don't know why people don't turn on this particular family, you know?
Well, I do think it's because of that image.
Mm.
And I think you are quite right that we look up to people who have this kind of cohesive family. Look at us. We're a country where one out of two are divorced.
Yeah. And what? Now, tell me, did the Republicans try and shut this book down?
Indeed, they did try.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, they were really effective. And it's one of the – it's probably my biggest regret in writing this book,
mm-hmm.
That it wasn't read throughout the red states. And I want to say, okay, guys – he won now, fair and square.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in this book that is going to scare you. It's going to give you an understanding, because there is no other president in the 20th century, I really believe,
yeah.
who is going to influence your life, your kids' life, and our culture more than George W. Bush.
Right. It's not clear that it was completely fair and square, that's for sure. But I think you're right. I think that people should read even the worst of it on him. But, like, they've got such a great propaganda machine out there that they will just look at you as some sort of, you know, liberal spinner or some sort of myth maker.
Yes, you're right. You're quite right.
But Hopefully, you know, some people who are enamored with Bush and love Bush will read the book just to see the other side of that.
I had a heck of a time in my own Republican family getting them to do that.
But at least you can just sit there and tell the stories at dinner. Thank you, Kitty Kelly, for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
You take care. The book is The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty. It's available on morningsedition.com. We will be back. Why do I keep saying that? We're not going anywhere. I'll be sitting right here waiting for you. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah. They're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
3 2-week supply of TheraBreath. Dial 1-800-590-9870. That's 1-800-590-9870.
49 past the hour. Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow he will be back.
Hey, Mayor.
What?
The guy from Poodle or T-Bag, the guy that likes to yell.
Yeah,
he's on line one.
Oh, that guy. Oh, man. All right, put him through, I guess. Hey, man, how's it going? I'm waiting. Where is it? Speak up, pal.
What? Oh, you mean the revolution?
Yes, yes. How's your teeny tiny liberal revolution going? How's the name coming on, buddy? That seems to be a big stumbling block for you guys.
Not anymore, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
We are no longer known as Nambler, Poodle, Gals, or Balls, or Teabag.
Yes.
Especially not Teabag. Thanks for the heads up on that one.
You're welcome, man.
We are now called the League of Aggressive Destabilizers.
So, let's see. Load, huh? Load? I got to admit, buddy, I'm a little worried about this one.
You should be worried, Mark. How does this sound? We're thinking about it for T-shirts. Load! In your face!
Oh no, it's definitely scary. I'm gonna have to hear you some more to get the feel for it though.
Load, swallow that, America.
Oh, no.
And load coming at you.
Oh no.
I want load to be on everyone's list.
Oh no, man. Let's back up. Let's talk some more about what your group is doing. Okay, you're an underground liberal organization. Last time we spoke, you had a recruiting drive, which was good, seeing as there are only two members in your group, you and your Shih Tzu stompers,
who cannot be left alone.
Right. So what are you doing to push the revolution forward this week, buddy? Do you have any funding you can draw on, any backers? Because you're going to need some cash to get this revolution off the ground, my friend.
Well, I have to admit, funding for load is coming in spurts.
Oh.
But I'm going to wipe that frown off my face, toot sweet.
Oh, my God. All right, okay. So are you having any you're having a fundraiser then, are you?
Yes, Mark, a fundraiser.
Okay.
I have sent a postcard to my Aunt Sylvia and Uncle Roger in Sausalito, who are sympathetic to our cause. They sent me a $50 savings bond.
That's it? You're going to run a revolution on $50, $50 savings bond?
No, Mark! Well, yes, actually I was. But if you remember, I still have my cover job as a sales associate at Lady Foot Locker, which pays me in the low two figures an hour, so there is a substantial revenue stream for load.
Oh, man. Can I give you some advice, buddy?
Yes, Mark!
All right, stop screaming, really. Look, you want to be a revolutionary, get the word out there, you want some cash, you have to get your hands dirty, pal.
All right, I'm prepared to do anything.
Okay, well, why don't you rob a bank? Did you ever see Dog Day Afternoon?
Oh, yes, Mark. I can see myself now, just like Al Pacino.
Well, I think you're more like the other guy, but I'm glad to see you're into this. And you definitely need a plan.
Plan?
Yeah.
Yes. Wait! I just had a brainstorm.
Oh, no.
My on and off again girlfriend is the night manager of her Crabtree and Evelyn.
Yeah.
She holds the keys, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Load will rob Crabtree and Evelyn. Scented soaps and lotions will be the lubricants that will launch load across the face of America.
No, you gotta stop using the group's name, man.
Load?
Yes, jeez.
Nothing can hold back load.
You gotta stop it, man.
Load is coming.
No, please, no.
I can't stop it.
No, dump the call, Chris. Just dump the call. Oh, my God. All right. That's there's got to be something wrong with all that. Oh, all right. Well, I hope Lowe does okay in the future. Here's a story. There's a guy who wants to. This guy Ken Ham has spent 11 years working on a museum that is a creation museum, the Creationist Museum in Northern Kentucky. The Museum for Creationism. And if I could quote Reverend Jerry Falwell, he said, quote, "When the museum is finished, it's going to be Cincinnati's number one tourist attraction. It's going to be a mini Disney World." End quote. Absolutely right. It's going to be a museum completely dedicated to fantasy, my friends, to fantasy. Oh, man, Chris.
Are you going back to the spa this weekend?
To the Russian bath?
Yes.
I was thinking about making a weekly thing of it.
Really?
I think it's a very encouraging. What do you want, Dan? Where are you going? What's going on? Are you coming in to sit down?
No,
how are you doing?
I just came to hand you your script.
They hand me my script? You don't think I know how to do that? You don't think I can reach over and get it myself? What a day it's been. Do I have a case of the Mondays? Is that what this is?
Keep up the good work, man.
Oh, man. Oh, Riley will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is a whole new day.
You've had a hard day.
I have had a hard day. Yeah, a hard day on myself. Well, what else is there? What else is there, my friend? What else is there? Is there, like, if I can, you know, if I could just let myself free, set myself free, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be relieving for everybody? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not everyone has this problem. Not everyone's hard on themselves, Chris?
No, you know, we are to an extent.
Yeah.
You know.
But you're saying not as bad as me.
Well, you know, we all talk to ourselves to some extent, but, you know.
Wow.
I am going nuts. You got to relax. You have a beautiful woman. That's your wife.
Oh no! Now
you're going to the bath.
I don't need the big support group. The Russian baths are. I'm thinking I am going to go back. I'm going to go back weekly because it's got to be healthy. It makes your skin flush. You just sit in this oven for as long as you can take. You dump cold water on yourself until you got to jump in the cold pool and then go into the eucalyptus sauna. I got to go to the doctor. I think there's this nasty cold going around. I think a lot of people have it, but it's gone right into my chest. But that, you know, this is not things that America needs to know about.
Well, I'm sure the guys at the baths will be very happy to know that your wife will be going back.
No, stop it. That's not nice. you don't get those kind of treatments every week. Well, and we got right through it. It was just an awkward moment. And I felt that, I handled it well. I think she handled it well. And it was...
Being topless?
Yeah. The, like I said before, the interesting thing was that the people that got the most uncomfortable immediately were women, of course.
Hey, everybody! We're all going to get laid!
Free gum!
I used to love the fat guys.
Let's not do that.
Okay,
because, you know, we're grown-ups here. And there's some good news on the horizon. Gas prices are down for the big Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully they'll stay down. Maybe you're just going to have to, amass some gas. Go fill up some tanks and put them in your garage. But that's one good thing that's on the horizon. Here's another one. Let's soon the liberal agenda. Oh, look at that. The liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here you go. Write these down, folks. Here are your marching orders. One, get yourself cloned in South Korea. Register your clone self as a Democrat. Two, replace all Guantanamo copies of Koran with waterproof versions. That should take some work. Three, go to the nearest Army recruiter's office and in your jauntiest voice ask, so how's business? Four, applaud President Hamid Karzai's work to help preserve Afghanistan's rare indigenous poppy plants. Five, accuse Laura Bush of not being inclusive for having no Christians or agnostics amongst the Arabs and Jews heckling her. And today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Hey, you graduated. Fantastic. Here, strap this boulder of debt on your back. Wake up, sheeple. Bush is the pharaoh and you're building his pyramid. How's that grab you? Tomorrow. What do we got tomorrow? Mark Riley's coming back, thank God. We'll step inside the Liberal Confessional, as we do every Tuesday. We've got new press founder Robert McChesney is going to discuss the state of the U.S. media. Lawton Smalls will be here. And I feel like I am going to be in a much better mood, much more excited and much more friendly, but angry, but in the friendly way that I do. You know what I'm talking about, Chris?
Have a good one, man.
Yeah, you too, Chris.